If you're listening to this, then you likely already know that being an independent musician can be a lonely road. And maybe your friends and your family just don't fully understand why you do what you do or why you invest so much time, energy, and money towards achieving your music goals. And especially early on, it can be hard to find people who really understand what you're trying to accomplish and how to make it happen. So that's where Modern Musician comes in. My name is Michael Walker, and you know, I can understand and relate to that feeling. I've been there myself, and so has our team of independent artists. And the truth is that basically everything good in my life has been the result of music. It's the reason I met my wife. It's why I have my three kids. It's how I met my best friends. And now with Modern Musician, we've seen so many talented artists who started out with a dream, with a passion, but without really a fan base, without a business, and be able to take that and turn it into a sustainable full-time career and be able to impact hundreds of thousands, even millions of fans with their music. And we've had thousands of messages from artists who've told us that we've helped change their lives forever. And it just gets even more exciting, fulfilling when you're surrounded by a community of other people who get it and who share their success and their knowledge with each other openly. And so if you are feeling called to make your music a full-time career and to be able to reach more people with your music, then I want to invite you to join our community so that we can support your growth and help lift you up as you pursue your musical dreams. You'll be able to interact in a community with other high-level artists, coaches, and industry professionals, as well as be able to participate in our daily live podcasts, meet these amazing guests, and get access to completely free training. If you'd like to join our family of artists who truly care about your success, then click on the link in the show notes and sign up now.
I think it's important to start to realize that there isn't a single path. I think everyone's looking for the perfect solution, right? And the one way to succeed. And I think ultimately the best solution is to start testing out what revenue streams are the best fit for your musical scene or for what you bring to the table.
Welcome to the Modern Musician Podcast, where each week I help you turn your passion for making music into a profitable career. This is all about you discovering and expressing who you really are so that you can build a loyal fan base that truly resonates with you and with your music, and you can impact more people with your artwork. I'm your host, Michael Walker, and let's get into it. Yeah! All right. I'm excited to be here today with my new friend, Dmitry Vitsa. So Dmitry, let me do a quick introduction for you. Dmitry founded Rock, Paper, Scissors in 1999. Oh, I love that game. Can't believe you invented Rock, Paper, Scissors.
Yep, that was me.
Rock, Paper, Scissors helped fuse cutting edge tech and storytelling into powerful PR and marketing strategies for innovators. He pioneered the do-it-yourself music tech PR with StoryAmp, and he continues to lead the conversations through their Music Tectonics podcast events and conference. So I'm excited to have him on the podcast today to talk a little bit about the landscape of the music industry as it relates to tech and, you know, some of the shifts that are happening. It feels like more and more rapidly, you know, as like we have the rise of AI and an emerging super intelligence. And so looking forward to hearing your perspective as someone that has, you know, perspective and experience with all of these innovators and people around the music industry focused on different things. So that artists who are watching this, you know, might get a little bit of a sneak peek of things around the corner. So Dmitry, thank you for taking time to be on the podcast today.
Hey, Michael, thanks for having me. Excited to have this conversation.
Absolutely. So, just to kick things off for anyone that this is their first time connecting with you, could you share a little bit about yourself and how you started the company and founded the Rock, Paper, Scissors game that became a household classic?
Well, we didn't actually found the game, but I started Rock, Paper, Scissors in 1999 as a PR firm that specialized in music from around the world. I was breaking artists and record labels and even festivals in the US that had this kind of global flavor. And then as I saw things shifting in the larger landscape around technology, I started thinking, how is this going to disrupt PR? And so I actually started StoryAmp, which you mentioned, which is an automated PR platform where artists can get their tour dates and their releases sent out to press automatically.
Cool.
2, 4, and 6 weeks before each release date or tour date and so forth. The company, the StoryAmp startup, it didn't like blow up into the Uber of music or the Airbnb of music as, you know, we all dreamed about when we started our startups. But I ended up getting really engrossed in the music industry in different ways. Other music tech companies started asking us if we could get the kind of press that we had gotten for our own startup. And so I started working with different companies, starting with CD Baby, eventually Rumblefish, and then every year it doubled. And so I started doing more and more PR, basically press strategy for music technology and innovative companies. the funny thing is it didn't like start that way. I never thought it was going to be a publicist, Michael. I was a kid in New York City. I actually was born in Nashville, Tennessee. And then at age 13, moved to New York. And as a teenager, like the whole city opened up to me and I started playing music in the streets. I was very involved with activism. I started demonstrating in the streets and I just got like really sucked into these vibrant cultures and activity and energy of New York. And so it was kind of like not what I expected to end up doing PR in music, but I was playing music too. So I was into it. And eventually I started doing these workshops using music to teach about different cultures around the world, about the, just the idea that you can learn from other people in the world rather than always seeing it as a challenge. Like I was really focused on anti-racism work and I wanted people to work on and think about what the opportunities were rather than the obstacles. So I used music to do that. And then I started doing storytelling for artists in PR with that same cultural lens. Like I, you know, the band Tanarawen from the Sahara Desert in Africa traded in Kalashnikov rifles and Rebellion for electric guitars. And they were very inspired by the music of rock and roll. And so all of a sudden these trance rhythms and so forth were getting translated into, electric guitars, basically. So it was a super, super cool thing. And then eventually when we got into music tech and the innovation side, we just wanted to tell stories in the same kind of exciting way. Sort of like, what are those societal shifts, those groundbreaking things that are transforming how music is made, how music is distributed, how artists make a living, how fans and listeners are experiencing music and all that kind of stuff.
Mm. Cool. Man, trading electric guitars for guns. How much better would the world be if that was just like a trade we could make worldwide?
Absolutely. I mean, it's the power of music, right? And I think that's what stuck with me in this side of music technology is some of the same things we did with this global music, introducing people across cultures through music, was introducing the ideas of access and transparency and how to make a living, a livelihood, all that kind of stuff. There's so much important things that's happening with shifts in music that I think is super relevant to anyone that wants to create music, whether they're going to do it as a career or just because it inspires them, it keeps them going. And I mean, that's always the trickiest part, right? Like you want to be in music. Is it going to be a hobby? Is it going to be a living, right? Is it going to be the thing that puts food on the table or is it going to be just something you have to do no matter what else happens? Are you going to attract a group of people who love what you're doing and inspire you? And then, you know, we're oftentimes talking about like, well, what are the workflow processes? What are the technology and tools that help you get there to empower artists and things like that?
Mm, cool. Yeah, that's like my world too. I love everything that you're talking about right now. It's like helping artists to build a sustainable career and connect with their communities. And so I would love to hear your experience from like, what do you see that's working right now? What separates artists who are struggling to connect with their fans and struggling to build a sustainable career from the artists you see that have built an audience and have a sustainable career? Like, what are some of the key factors and the things that an indie artist who listens right now really should be hyper-focused on?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, like I was saying, like you have to decide whether this is a hobby or a living. And I think we're always looking through the lens of, can we make this a living? Can any artist make a living out of this? There's so many great tools for making music and distributing music and so forth. And people now have direct access to fans as well. So it feels like everybody should be able to make a sustainable career out of music. But the truth is that's not going to happen. And that's the hardest thing to say or to hear when you're talking about music. The biggest challenge for artists today is making great music and building an audience. You mentioned what do you do to build an audience? But I think we've got to rewind. We got to like stay focused on just because you know how to play your instrument, just because you've written a song or you've done one great social media video that maybe even went viral, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to build an audience that's going to last and sustain you. So I think it goes back to like, have you truly figured out how to make the best music that you can make and do it on a consistent basis. That includes performance and technical things, playing the instruments or producing and things like that. But it also includes writing. Whose songs are you going to sing or whose songs are you going to play? So I just don't want to understate the importance of making great music, because I think everyone wants to jump to, you know, you see this and you see that somebody succeeded with an Amazon business and somebody else succeeded with a podcast. We can succeed as an artist, but not everybody's going to succeed. And that's not meant to say lower your standard. It's just meant to say you got to pay attention to what your ultimate product is, which is great music. Now, after that, you ask the question, well, how do I feed myself? Is this going to be am I going to be a full-time artist? Is this going to be what I do to build a big enough audience and support myself financially or my family financially? And if the answer is yes, then we can start to answer some questions, right? You have to decide where you're going to spend your time and what activities get you closer to finding fulfillment as a musician or making music or driving your livelihood. And so ultimately, I guess I would say the biggest probably challenge and the biggest opportunity for artists, to answer your question about like, how do you do this, is your appetite for risk and time management. Are you willing to put it all on the line for this right now? And once you are, how are you going to do all the things that you have to do? Because there's so many that you can't do them all. You have to pick and choose. And then once you pick and choose, you have to figure out what's going to drive the most value for you. So I know that's kind of a broader and more philosophical question to what you're asking, but that's my answer.
It's a great answer. Yeah. I mean, it's very much so in line with, I just hopped off a conversation with one of the heads at Bandcamp. And they said the exact same thing, where it's like, ultimately, you know, you have to start with the product. You have to start with the music. And that's the thing that often is easy to overlook and flashy, like, you know, promo or marketing tactics or strategies. When it's like, it kind of comes down to the root of like your product and the music touching people and the connections you're making and building an authentic relationship with those fans. What I'm hearing you say is that, you know, basically a very similar thing in terms of, you know, understanding the value of the product and the music, the songs that you're writing and connecting with the fans. And also one thing I appreciate about what you just said is just like the fact that there's not enough time to do everything. Like it's like a newsfeed where you can keep scrolling limitlessly. Like there's never like, you're never going to be able to do everything. So like prioritization and learning how to focus on the things that actually move the needle is really important. Knowing that, I'm curious, like, if you have a few examples of things right now for artists, maybe like three or a few of like the most important things that if they have a limited amount of time and energy, but maybe they've decided, you know, maybe they've decided, you know, like I am going to go all in on this. I'm going to give this a year, kind of like to give it a shot. Where do they even get started in terms of building an audience and starting to monetize their music?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the most important things is to realize there's no single formula for success. So whatever I say right now will apply more to some artists than others, or some bands or others, or some songwriters and others. And I think it's important to start to realize that there isn't a single path. I think everyone's looking for the personal perfect solution, right? And the one way to succeed. And I think ultimately, the best solution is to start testing out what revenue streams are the best fit for your musical scene or for what you bring to the table. So songwriters, producers, live performers, they all have different paths. And to be aware of that, acoustic artists, electronic dance music producers, horn players, DJs, they all have different ideal revenue pathways. So the first step is to really understand, like, how do you fit into the larger ecosystem and how's that going to work? It also is kind of an alignment between your own personal talents and skills too. You know, like if you're not a video savvy person and you're never going to be, like, you could take a class and you'd be great, or maybe you could take a class and you'd still suck at it. Social media is probably not going to be your primary method. It's just going to be really, really tough. And so you have to kind of like or find a team member, you know, like figure out, well, how would you outsource something like that? But again, like, you know, a live performer, touring is one of the best ways to make money, right? But you have to have an audience first, right? My thing, let's just take some of the pathways. We won't talk about all of them, Michael, but like if you are a live performer, if that's what you really do well, here's a potential pathway for testing revenue streams. Start by playing locally, obviously. Once you start traveling, it gets really expensive. convincing people outside of your local market to book you is highly risky. It's hard to do, et cetera. Play locally. Build up a regular gig. It could be a monthly or a weekly gig where you start to test out how people are responding to stuff. Then talk to your fans. Find out, or I shouldn't say fans. At that point, you might not have fans. Talk to the people who happen to show up to your show and figure out if they're fans. Figure out what they liked and optimize for it. You know, I've got a 16-year-old kid who's in a band, and the singer of the band always has the mic way down low and has the guitar fuzz way up high. I'm like, she has a beautiful voice. We need to optimize this voice. Get that kind of feedback from your fans. Like, really, almost you almost want to imagine what it's like to stand in front of the stage and listen to what your show sounds like through the ears of a listener and optimize for that. Once you get a regular show going locally, you can maybe you turn it into residency. Maybe you figure out how to partner with a local venue that's just getting started, and you're going to help them build audience. You're going to do the marketing for their venue while you're doing the marketing for your music and for your shows. You know, get other people to play on the show, so you're bringing other people's audiences in with it. Think of it like a residency. Then think in terms of larger concentric circles. Play, you know, start doing a monthly gig in the next town over. You know, if that's, do the same thing you did locally, but start to make yourself a part of that community. Then do it again with another community an hour away the other direction, or 2 hours away the other direction. Make it easy on yourself to actually be able to get to these gigs without having to pay for hotels or booking or all that kind of stuff. And then think in concentric circles. Once you build out an audience in those local markets, you can start to tell a story to managers and booking agents and things like that. But that's just one path. If you're not a live performer, if you're a songwriter, but you're not a live performer, you have to go down another path. Maybe start looking at what it means to do synchronization licenses, write music specifically for particular types of shows or movies or outlets or opportunities there. So you would follow a different path. But really what you're doing ultimately over time is testing out what it takes to build an audience, or testing out what it takes to build a revenue stream. Is that too general, Michael, or is that helpful?
I think that's super helpful. And yeah, I appreciate the honesty around, like, you know, one of the, like, we all, it would be great if there's a magic wand and it was just like, yeah, this is the thing that works for everyone every single time. But also it'd be kind of boring too if, like, we were all just like the same. We are the same human robot.
They do try. Like, they do think, oh, I saw this pathway, or I perceive it as this pathway, and they try to follow it. But it doesn't always work for everybody. And I think, like, in an ideal world, artists should be able to learn and lean into both their strengths and their interests and luck, opportunities that show up, and figure out the path from there. Like, it should feel like it comes, like, you should have as much creativity in your career as you do in your music writing, right? It should feel like this makes sense, right? I like playing on the street. That's what I'm going to do, you know, and then see where it goes from there. Or I like doing video creation, or I like doing educational content, or I like performing at private gigs. That's another opportunity for performers. There's a company we work with called Gig Salad, which basically matches any type of performer with any type of event creator. So it's not a traditional, like, book your gigs at a venue or get a tour. It's more like, hey, I play a kind of music that works great for birthday parties or weddings or for private events, corporate events, whatever. It's a great
tool. We actually had him on our podcast.
Mark Steiner?
Probably like a couple of years ago. It's been a hot minute, but it was very cool.
Yeah, they're still alive and kicking. And it's a great way for an independent artist to not have to worry about getting a booking agent, but get their 10,000 hours of performing for an audience. You can start to build, like, legit national fan bases by playing local events or very small private events as well. Those people, you change their life, right? They're like, that was my mom's birthday, and you gave her the best performance that we've ever seen, you know? So there's a lot of tools like that. That's kind of like, there's a lot of companies that have created different solutions. And Michael, I think you're in this world as well. That's kind of the core of what we do at music at Rock, Paper, Scissors. And then I also run this conference, Music Tectonics, in Santa Monica, where we bring together 700 music tech innovators to have these conversations about the business. We also have a creator fair. So we bring in musical instrument companies, sometimes new musical instruments. People get to play them for the first time on the beach in Santa Monica. But what we do is we surface really cool companies solving these kinds of problems for artists, for record labels, for publishers, and the music industry as a whole. So, I mean, I could go into more if you want, like, more specifics.
That's awesome. I mean, I love the conference that you just described. I mean, like, as soon as you said that, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I want to be there, like, you know, connecting with people. Hyper-focused on what you just shared. It sounds like just one general tip that is important for everyone to take into account is you know, that it's okay to reference and kind of like know what other people are doing. Like, oh, this is a path that this person has taken, or this is the path that they've taken, to know what those are, to reference and have examples. But ultimately, you have to appreciate the fact that we're all unique and we all have unique strengths and weaknesses. And, you know, not what worked for one person isn't necessarily going to work for you. And so you have to have like a experimenter's mindset. You have to be willing to like try and see where things land. Awesome. I would love to hear more about the conference you're just talking about. And it may be a few examples of like some of the types of companies that you're working with that you're most excited about right now that might be shaping the music industry in ways that the audience also would be like, whoa, that's a cool idea.
Cool. Yeah. No, I think we can talk through some like pathways, kind of like what I was talking about. And then I'll wrap up by talking and telling you a little bit more about the conference as well, because that's another one of the pathways that like you, Michael, I think you would love it, but I'll get to that. Mm-hmm. So for artists who are in practice mode, right? Let's say you're not ready to put out any music big time. I mean, you're still pursuing your career. There's a great app that we've worked with called Moises. And basically what does, it was named as the Apple iPad app of the year last year. And you can do it on your tablet or on your phone, whatever. But basically it allows you to isolate and mute instruments and vocals so you can practice songs. So you can even play them at any speed, but still keep the right key, or you can change the key. It detects chords. It can transcribe lyrics. It can automatically transpose chords for you as well. So it's a really helpful tool if you're like, how do you play this song? How, you know, you want to learn it. You can pull out just the drums stem so that you can listen to it and replicate it. Or you can flip it and pull out, make it so there's no drums at all, so that you're playing with the band as well. So it's a really cool app. It's got millions of users. They just launched a real-time version as well, which allows you to have control over like we're doing a video call right now for this. We can actually control the stems in our conversation in real time. That's how good the AI has gotten. So Moises is one that's pretty cool, and a lot of people.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, just real quick, plus one to Moises. Yeah, I first heard about Moises when one of our clients, First to 11, they've gotten over like 650 million views on their YouTube channel, and they specialize on cover songs, and they love Moises. And he showed me his workflow with Moises, and I was blown. My mind was absolutely blown. So I just want to give a plus one to Moises, a tool for everyone to check out. It's cool that you work with them.
Yeah. Artists love them. I mean, even by the time they got to us, they already had a lot of users, and it's just grown from there. Now, for artists who are still building their tech stack for music creation, if you're like, I've heard of a DAW, a digital audio workstation, but I don't really want to have to learn one. We also work with a great company that I think a lot of newcomers to music production would like, which is called BandLab. It's basically a DAW in your pocket. It's a way to produce music on your phone. So for the first time ever, artists are creating like fully releasable songs just with their phone. They might be in their closet or in their car, whatever, to get it started, which I know doesn't sound like super pro, but that's how good these apps have gotten. It's got pitch correction. It's got a beats marketplace. If you're a rapper and you want to, or an R&B singer and you want to put some beats down, you can also distribute your music once it's done. It's all wrapped up into this social app that allows you to share your music, discover music, and also collaborate too. So you can actually collaborate on individual sessions and like bring other people into a session in real time. They have like automation tools for mixing and effects, and you can even map MIDI devices. So it's like if you haven't produced music yet and you're like, I don't even know how to get started, this is like as easy as Instagram. You know, like you're already messing around on social media. Why not produce a song on your phone too?
Super cool.
Yeah, that one's cool. And then for artists who have songs and they're ready to release, there's different distribution options out there. I don't know if probably most of your audience knows that you can't just distribute your music directly onto Spotify and Apple Music. You work with a distributor. There's a great one out of Sweden called Amuse, and artists can distribute their music for just $20 a year. And then as you get better and you can show, you've got a lot of analytics you can review and see how you're doing and optimize. But as you can show those analytics, you can even get advanced funding directly from the distributor. So without having to do a record deal where you're signing everything away, you're still getting advances so that you can pay for whatever, that new microphone or some new instruments, or maybe you're paying your mortgage while you, or your rent while you're just producing your next release or something like that. And they have all sorts of tools for helping with strategic guidance too. So, but all with maintaining your own ownership of your masters, and you still have all full creative control. So that's a good one too. I got a couple more if you have time.
Yeah, we do. I mean, all three of those are slam dunks. So I'd love to hear a couple more.
Okay, I told you about Gig Salad, so we don't have to go in that again. But if you're a performing artist, check that one out as a way to get bookings without having to rely on an agent. That's super cool. But let's kind of like widen out. Maybe you're further along. Maybe you're more like a composer or aiming to be like a film sound designer. Spitfire is a great VST virtual instrument company. They just partnered with the guy who did the soundtrack for The Last of Us, Gustavo Santaolalla. They did this great, he plays this 10-string Andean instrument. It's like a guitar that's called the Ranroco. And he basically released a VST of this. So now you can sound exactly like him. You can, obviously you don't write the same songs, but like in terms of the style of the instrument and so forth. So wow. It's really cool. If you're into like Latin rock or these Hollywood epic films, or even these video game franchises, you can start to sound like that. So, you know, there's lots of great VST and plugin.
Is that the main stringed instrument in the Last of Us theme song?
That's like, bling, it. You bling, got bling, it. Bling, bling,
bling, bling. Oh, cool. Ah, man. I love listening to that theme song in the intro. Played the game, one of the best games of all time. Watched the show. I won't spoil anything, but very, very emotionally charged moment in the most recent season that just happened. But very cool. Yeah. And I didn't realize, I thought it was like a guitar, but it's called, what did you say was the name of it again?
It's the Ranroco. It's got Ranroco. 10 strings. I assume it's like they're the reason it gets that resonance is because they're pairs of string, five pairs of strings, which is pretty cool. Mm.
Cool. So, yeah.
All right. I got one more for you. And this is on the marketing front. If you've already got everything out there and you're at that point where you're really optimizing on revenue and audience building, there's a platform called Symphony OS. And it's a platform for automated advertising to increase how many listens you get, your social engagement, and it gives you more insights about who your fans are. It helps you with like pre-saves and touring to really see where people are and to optimize to target them with a lot of automation. You know, it's crazy to think about, if you're an independent artist spending all this time like figuring out the Meta and the TikTok and the Google platforms for ads, but it is really one of the primary methods for people to drive that online digital engagement. This is a company that worked with Big X the Plug on his recent breakout to do a pre-save campaign, which ended up getting him like number four on Billboard's Hot 100. So this is something that independent artists can use, but also as you scale, as you're further along, record labels love to use Symphony OS, management companies as well. That's a little more like technical, but not on the creation side, but more on the optimization. It, really, we've come full circle to your original question. How do you build audience? There's a lot that can be done there with... I got a dog barking here. Do you hear that?
I did. That's okay, though.
Yeah.
Hey, puppy.
Give me 1 second. Sorry, we have a delivery guy here, and my dog always barks.
All good. It gave me a chance to jam along a little bit with Last of Us theme song.
Nice. Sorry about that. So
I need to get that VST, and then I can play the guitar.
Yes, you'll sound just like it.
Oh, gosh. What was it called again?
I got to look it up every time. Ranroco.
Ranroca.
Yeah.
Ranroco. So cool.
Yeah. Super cool. Yeah. So anyway, those are some tools, Michael, those are some tools that folks might want to use. I, you know, tried to follow different pathways depending on where artists are. There's so much innovation happening. I think it can be overwhelming. But again, I think if people choose their specific kind of pathway that makes sense for them, where they are in their career, what their strengths are, where they're trying to grow, et cetera. Those are opportunities. And I guess the last thing, I mean, you mentioned at the beginning for companies into the music innovation side of things that you're like doing business in music, you've got a startup or a record label or you're managing artists or even creators, because we actually have a creator fair now. If you want to try out the newest musical instruments, gear, software, come to the Music Tectonics Conference. This is my plug, Michael. I hope it's okay. November 4th to 6th, we hold it this year. Over 700 people on the beach in Santa Monica. All of our venues, we have three different venues. Each day is a different venue. They're beachside venues. Some are indoor, some are outdoor. It's a great place to do business, to be focused on these types of conversation about what tools are transforming the music industry. Again, a lot of B2B stuff there, but now that we've got the Creator Fair, there's things for artists to do and social video creators as well to try out new instruments and just make connections with a lot of the companies and some of the types of tools. A lot of the companies I mentioned will be there. Some of them will be sponsoring and doing booths or experiences, things like that too. So those are my recommendations.
Mm, awesome. The event sounds great. Could you recap again the dates for the event this year?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you go to musictectonics.com, you can see it. But this year, we're a little later. We're November 4th to 6th, 2025. Again, it's in Santa Monica. And so our first day is a creator fair and a startup demo roundtable that takes place at a carousel on the Santa Monica Pier. We rent out the whole carousel. We've got the deck right outside. So that one literally is right out on the beach. You're over the water, basically. That's the first day. The second day, we go to a nearby venue that has a pool, literally, like our exhibitors are around a pool, and all the event spaces are either outside or they have windows out to the ocean as well. That's where all our panels and keynotes and some of our parties are. And then the third day, we take over a roofside venue called Expert Dojo, where we do like a startup kind of boot camp for startups to kind of like meet investors, hear from record labels and things like that as well.
Wow, that is so cool. I love that event. I would love to attend one of the events. You know, these days I've got the three kids that are, you know, 6, 4, and 2, and my wife. I have to run into everything by, but this sounds like the exact kind of thing that would be a good reason to travel to the West Coast.
I mean, if you can tie it to a family vacation, there's literally a Ferris wheel right outside our first day venue. There's a Ferris wheel. There's the carousel. Lots of fun stuff to do right there, and the beach is beautiful.
Okay. Ooh, you say you're selling me on it. It sounds pretty awesome. Cool. Dimitri, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you for coming on the podcast and sharing some wisdom around, you know, some of the foundational pieces for an artist who's looking to build a career in today's industry, as well as some of the fun movements and trends that are kind of happening across the landscape. So I really appreciate you taking the time to come on here and share that. And also thank you for the work that you're doing on behalf of the full music industry and kind of bringing together these innovators to come together and, you know, and to create the future together. I think it's awesome. And like always, we'll put all the links in the show notes for easy access. And thank you again for being on the podcast today.
Thanks, Michael. This was fun. Talk to you soon.
Hey, this is Michael. And I just wanted to say thank you for tuning into this episode of the podcast. I hope you found it really valuable. And if you did, if you want to share the word, we really appreciate you leaving a 5-star review on the podcast channel. If you want to learn more about the guest, you can check out the show notes for the links. And before you go, I wanted to remind you that I'm looking for new artists to mentor personally. Before we get started, we always offer a free 30-minute coaching call to make sure it's a good fit before you get your campaign launched. At this point, the artists that we've worked with have hit over 561.3 million streams, a number one album on iTunes, and we've helped many artists grow from scratch to making a full-time income with their music online. In a few rare cases, they've even been able to generate $1 million per year with their music. That being said, we are very selective with who we work with, just based on who's the best fit and who we can best serve. And because we have a limited amount of time available for this free sessions, we do require an application process where you can submit your music and you can apply for a free coaching call with our team. So if you're interested, go ahead and click on the link in the show notes to submit an application, share one of your songs. We look forward to checking out your music, and we'll see you in the next episode.